ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम 10th कैंटो फर्स्ट चैप्टर टेक्स्ट 41। द चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द एडवेंट ऑफ लॉर्ड कृष्णा इंट्रोडक्शन। स्वप्ने यथा पश्यति देहमीदृशम् मनोरथेन अभिनिविष्ट चेतनाः दृष्टश्रुताभ्यां मनसानुचिन्तयन् प्रपद्यते तत् किमपि हि अपस्मृतिः। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। Having experienced a situation by seeing or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation, and thus one surrenders to it, not considering his present body. Similarly, by mental adjustments, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances in different bodies and forgets his actual position. Under this same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another, tatha dehantara praptihi. Purport. The purport is actually a class in itself, so my talking is actually superfluous. Transmigration of the soul is very clearly explained in this verse. One sometimes forgets his present body and thinks of his childhood body, a body of the past, and of how one was playing, jumping, talking, and so on. When the material body is no longer workable, it becomes dust. For dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. But when the body again mixes with the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, the mind continues to work. The mind is this subtle substance in which the body is created, as we actually experience in our dreams and also when we are awake in contemplation. One must understand that the process of mental speculation develops a new type of body that does not actually exist. If one can understand the nature of the mind, manorathena, and its thinking, feeling, and willing, one can very easily understand how from the mind different types of bodies develop. The Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, offers a process of transcendental activities wherein the mind is fully absorbed in affairs pertaining to Krishna. The presence of the soul is perceived by consciousness, and one must purify his consciousness from material to spiritual, or in other words, to Krishna consciousness. That which is spiritual is eternal, and that which is material is temporary. Without Krishna consciousness, one's consciousness is always absorbed in temporary things. For everyone, therefore, Krishna recommends in Bhagavad Gita 9.34, Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. One should always be absorbed in thought of Krishna. One should become his devotee. One should always engage in his service and worship him as the supreme great. And one should always offer him obeisances. In the material world, one is always a servant of a greater person, and in the spiritual world, our constitutional position is to serve the Supreme, the greatest, Param Brahma. This is the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Swarupa Hai Krishnera Nitya Das. To act in Krishna consciousness is the perfection of life and the highest perfection of yoga. As Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 6.47, Yoginamapi sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yo mam same yukta tamomataha. Of all the yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. The condition of the mind which flickers between sankalpa and vikalpa, accepting something and rejecting, it is very important in transferring the soul to another material body at the time of death. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajati ante kalevaram tam tam evaita kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavitah. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. Bhagavad Gita 8.6. Therefore, one must train the mind in the system of Bhakti Yoga, as did Maharaj Ambarish, who kept himself always in Krishna consciousness. Savai manaha Krishna padaravindayoho. One must fix the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna 24 hours a day. If the mind is fixed upon Krishna's lotus feet, the activities of the other senses will be engaged in Krishna's service. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchyate. To serve Rishikesh, the master of the senses, with purified senses is called bhakti. Those who constantly engage in devotional service are situated in a transcendental state above the material modes of nature. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 14.26, Mam chayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityetan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. One must learn the secret of success from the Vedic literatures, especially when the cream of Vedic knowledge is presented by Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because the mind is ultimately controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the word apasmritihi is significant. Forgetfulness of one's own identity is called apasmritihi. The apasmritihi can be controlled by the Supreme Lord, for the Lord says, Matta smriti jnanam apohanam cha. From me come remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. Instead of allowing one to forget one's real position, Krishna can revive one's original identity at the time of one's death, even though the mind may be flickering. Although the mind may work imperfectly at the time of death, Krishna gives a devotee shelter at his lotus feet. Therefore, when a devotee gives up his body, the mind does not take him to another material body. Tektva deham punarjanma neti mamiti. Rather, Krishna takes the devotee to that place where he is engaged in his pastimes, mameti, as we have already discussed in previous verses. One's consciousness, therefore, must always be absorbed in Krishna, and then one's life will be successful. Otherwise, the mind will carry the soul to another material body. The soul will be placed in the semen of a father and discharged into the womb of a mother. The semen and ovum create a particular type of body according to the form of the father and mother. And when the body is mature, the soul emerges in that body and begins a new life. This is the process of transmigration of the soul from one body to another, tatha dehantara praptihi. Unfortunately, those who are less intelligent think that when the body disappears, everything is finished. The entire world is being misled by such fools and rascals. But as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.20, na hanyate hanyamane sharire, the soul does not die when the body is destroyed. Rather, the soul takes on another body. Purport we have just now read, the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness has been encapsulated. There is nothing more that one need talk about once we read this purport very carefully. The temporary nature of human body has been postulated. How our existence is dreamlike, that has been conveyed. And how we can get out of this dreamlike existence, that also has been very beautifully portrayed by Srila Prabhupada. And the process of Krishna consciousness, how it is so very powerful in freeing us from material existence, that also has been very beautifully described. So there is hardly anything that I can add to what Srila Prabhupada has said. But since I have been given this service of giving a class, I will say a few words. Just to give a brief background, there is a saying in English that a leopard does not change its spots. Similarly, an inherently demoniac person like Kamsa is incapable of changing his nature. We read that one moment Kamsa was driving the chariot in which his sister Devaki and his brother-in-law Vasudev were riding. He appeared to be extremely happy doing that particular service. And the next moment, he hears an omen saying that the eighth child of Devaki is going to kill you. And then what happens? He becomes his true self. Immediately, his demoniac nature reasserts itself and Bhaginim Hantum Arabdham Khadgapani Kache Agrahit. So immediately he takes hold of his sword and wants to cut off or sever the head of Devaki. So that is demoniac nature at its best. And we have Vasudev, a devotee of the Supreme Lord and husband of Devaki. What is he supposed to do in this situation? He cannot pick up a weapon and, you know, fight with Kamsa and kill him. Incapable of doing it. But at the same time, he has a great responsibility to discharge. One, he's a devotee of the Lord, and he knows instinctively or through the omen that the Supreme Lord is going to take birth in Devaki's womb, or he's going to appear in Devaki's womb. So obviously, he has a very difficult, you know, duty to perform. So since he cannot fight with Kamsa, he does what he can do best, that is preaching. He preaches to the demoniac Kamsa. And very beautiful preaching. In the previous verses, we have read how Vasudev tries to convince Kamsa that he should desist from doing this heinous act of killing his sister. He says, "My dear brother-in-law, you are the pride of your family, the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise you, your qualities. You are such a qualified person. How can you kill a woman, that to your sister, especially when she just married?" So Vasudev, very intelligent, wonderful preacher, he tries to actually appeal to the heart. I don't know whether Kamsa had a heart, but nevertheless, tries to appeal to the qualities of heart of Kamsa and to his, you know, better sense. Then Vasudev impresses upon Kamsa that by trying to kill Devaki, he is not going to gain any exemption from death himself. Says Jatasya hi dhruvam mrityu. Says by killing Devaki, it is not as if you are not going to be dying one day. Death is going to come to you anyway. So that philosophical idea he injects in his mind. Then he says that this material body is made up of five elements, and earth, water, fire, ether, etc. And it is going to turn to dust. And at death, you are going to receive another body. So even dying at the hands of eighth son of Devaki is not the end all. There is something beyond that is going to take place. This way, very intelligently, Vasudev tries to convince. He gives very beautiful examples. He says, just as a person traveling on the road rests first his first foot, then the second one. It is not that both the feet, you know, he puts forward. Or he gives an example of an insect crawling from one leaf to the another. The leaf, the insect tries to catch hold of the other leaf and then leaves the first leaf. So this way he says that the human life also ends this way. The subtle body consists of mind, intelligence and ego. It facilitates the transfer of the soul from one body to another. And this way Vasudev tries to convince Kamsa that what he is doing is not right. And in the present verse that we are reading, Vasudev speaks of actually dreamlike existence of a living entity in this material world and transmigration of the soul and other related matters. So basically, we living entities, we souls, who are inhabiting this material world, we are always under the influence of Krishna's illusory energy, Maya Devi. Originally, our consciousness was pure, but contact with material modes, our consciousness becomes or became polluted. Just like rainwater is inherently pure, But when it comes in touch with mud, it becomes muddy. Similarly, our consciousness, when it comes in touch with the modes of material nature, it becomes contaminated. And then we forget our true identity. Actually, Prabhupada says, our true identity is Jivera Swarupohai Krishnera Nitya Das. That is our true identity. So when we forget our true identity, we are in an illusioned state of consciousness. When you forget who we are actually in a state of sleep. We are in illusion. So basically, every living being is in, he can be in four states of consciousness. One is Jagriti. The second one is Swapna. The third one is Sushupti. And the fourth one, the exalted one, the Turiya or the Samadhi state of consciousness. Now, even in so-called Jagriti, even in the state of wakefulness, we are in a dreamlike existence. Actually, if you analyze our existence, present existence in the body, it changes from childhood to youth to old age, finally, of course, death. What does it mean? That once upon a time we were children, but our childhood died, and we became youth. Then our youth died, and then we became old, and one day we have to make a transition to another body. So our life in a particular body has a beginning and an end. It is temporary. We may think that, you know, life, there is pleasure in material enjoyment, but that which has a beginning and which has an end is not eternal. Whereas spiritual consciousness is eternal. Krishna consciousness is eternal. So we have gone through so many good and bad experiences in our life. If you analyze, if I go back in my own life, I find there are so many good and bad experiences. But now, it's just like kind of a dream, something which was very fleeting. It has just passed by. Now, it no longer affects me one way or the other. So that is so in case of everyone. And we originally came down to this material world because we tried to usurp the position of Krishna. We wanted to be enjoyers, not with him, but separately from him. So Krishna said, go to the material world and go to sleep there. Sleep to the reality of one's existence. So this is, even the so-called Jagriti Avastha is in one sense a dreamlike existence because nothing is in real. That which is not real is illusory. So there is nothing dreamlike quality about it. So in the Swapna state or in the dreamlike state, everything seems quite real, isn't it? We go through the same emotions and impressions as if we are in Jagrata Avastha. So, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that mind is the subtle substance in which different bodies are created. In our dreams, we create so many things, so many bodies. A good example to give is that very many times in dream, we feel that a ferocious tiger is chasing us. It's chasing after us and we are running. And we feel that we are trying to escape, but finally that ferocious tiger comes and grabs you by the neck and it's about to, you know, bite into your flesh. And then you wake up with a thud. You know, you're on your bed sleeping. But the dream state has had a physical kind of effect. You are broken into sweat, you are perspiring and you are uneasy, uncomfortable. So that's a dream. It was not a reality at all. But still, that dream has had its effect on us, isn't it? I remember I got my doctorate in 1966. And after I retired as a university professor, I still sometimes get a dream that my thesis was not accepted by my foreign referee. My foreign referee was Professor Ruzika. No? I still feel that Professor Ruzika had not accepted my thesis, even to this day, though I have guided so many students. So this is, it is amazing. And I think the answer is that our mind is amazing. We have the external consciousness and internal consciousness. I remember once in his lecture, Suhotra Maharaj said that our mind is like an iceberg. You know? It's like an iceberg. And what our external consciousness is just the tip of the iceberg. The bulk of our consciousness is below the water, which we don't see, we perceive. And when a thought will perceive, when a desire will sprout, we have absolutely no clue whatsoever. We do not know how and why we behave in a way that we behave, or how and why a particular thing happens in our life. We think that we are in control, but we aren't. So real, an iceberg phenomena. And in this state, we keep on dreaming. It's really funny the way we dream. Now, why does this happen? This means that when we are in a dream state, we imagine the dream to be a reality. So Radhesham Prabhu, in his one of his books, tells a very beautiful story. He says that once there was a king, and he had a dream. And in his dream, he was feeling that he has become a butterfly. And as a butterfly, he is jumping from one flower to another flower. And all throughout, for a long time, he dreamt the same thing. So much so that his mind became affected. So in the dead of the night, after the dream got over, he called all his courtiers. This is Radhesham Prabhu's story, not mine. He called all his courtiers and he said, I want you to explain one thing to me. He said that I have had this dream for a long time. I want to know whether I am a king who has become a butterfly or whether I am a butterfly who has become a king. So please explain this dilemma to me. So this way the king got affected. Basically, actually, neither of the things is true, isn't it? The truth is that a spirit soul has occupied the body of a king. So he's become a king. And if he thinks I'm a king, he's in a dream. He's in illusion. So then, on the other hand, if he thinks that a butterfly, if he thinks that I'm a butterfly, that is a dream within a dream. He identifies himself with a dream within a dream. So our so-called Jagrata Avastha is a dream, and in that dream we dream more dreams. So that is our human existence. So we keep on dreaming after, wealth, dreaming after money, dreaming about, good health, dreaming about so many things in our life. But these things will not happen, or are not. If they are not destined to happen, they will not happen. Good health is not something which you can have simply by being, very careful. There are some people who said, I did pranayam, I did this, I did that, I was very regular, I ate, this food, but still, I have this deadly disease. But no, these things, if they are destined, they will happen. And we keep on. Our human life is one continuous dream. So the question arises as to how can we distinguish between reality and illusion. What is the answer? The answer is given by the Supreme Lord Krishna himself. He says in the Bhagavad Gita that reality is that which exists without cessation and which continues and which is everlasting. A dream has a beginning and an end and therefore cannot be real. So our material existence is a dream because it has a beginning and it has an end. Jatasya hi dhruvam mrutyu dhruvam janma mrutasya cha. So one who is born is going to die one day. There is no exemption. There is no etiquette. So everybody is going to die. So that being the state of affairs, it is also, since it has a beginning and end, our material existence is a dreamlike existence. And we say dreamlike, may not be exactly a dream. So many things that we do are real. Right now I am speaking something. You'll say, what is this? But it is dreamlike existence. And it is going to come to end at some age. Somebody may die at a young age, somebody may die at an old age, depending upon, whatever is written. It is said that the number of breaths that one takes, that is also, earmarked. How many breaths you are going to breathe in your life, that is also known. So this way, we can very clearly come to know the distinction between illusion and reality. So Krishna says that those who are seers of truth have concluded that of the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance, and of the eternal soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. So in Sushupti state, the living entity is in such a deep sleep that he does not even know what is happening around him. And at the time of death, what happens? We are put into a deep sleep, Sushupti, until we get a placement in another body. So depending upon what our consciousness is at the time of death, Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram, depending upon our state of consciousness, we'll get, and our desires, our fruitive activities, we'll get another body. So it is just a question of transference. It is just transmigration from one body to another. So all the three states, that is Jagruti, then Swapna and Sushupti, are actually, in one sense, illusory. The fourth one, wherein you are completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada describes in his purport, that state is free from illusion. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that mind flickers between sankalpa and vikalpa, accepting and rejecting. So this is what I meant, that we really do not know what we are accepting. Though, you know, our externally we may not accept, internally we accept. Externally we may not be attracted to something, we may not have a desire for something, but internally in the subconscious we develop a subtle desire to have that. And this will affect the type of body that we are going to get. Some preacher had said that if you desire to eat gulab jamun, you know, at the time of death, you will still be born for that desire. So any kind of desire is bad. So what is the solution? Srila Prabhupada has given a beautiful solution. He says that by engaging the mind in Krishna consciousness, when the mind is fully absorbed in affairs pertaining to Krishna, the consciousness of a living entity is transformed from the material to spiritual. So as long as we are in material consciousness, our dreamlike existence will continue. Will continue. All the joys and suffering, all they will continue. Nobody can be continuously happy or nobody can be continuously unhappy. All this will keep on continuing. But when we learn the art of absorbing ourselves in by Krishna consciousness, we can transform our material consciousness into spiritual consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada quotes that beautiful verse, Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namuskuru mame vashyasi sat yukteiva atmanam mat parayanaha. So mat parayanaha. So you have to try and become fully absorbed in Krishna's affairs. And then we can really go back from a state of illusion, this dreamlike existence, to the reality. And the reality is that we are Krishnera Nityadas. That is the reality. And we are, I don't know how many miles away, speaking for myself, how many miles away from realizing that simple fact, Nityadas. So very, very difficult. So while going to night, we say, good night, happy dreams. But all this is actually, in truth, if you analyze, there are no happy dreams in material life. Everything, you know, is miserable. And at what point in time misery will creep into your life cannot be, you know, ascertained. One fine day you think everything is going rosy, hunky-dory, and then suddenly, no, misery erupts in your life. And then you are tossed from one state of consciousness to another state of consciousness. And then you start dreaming, when will I get out of this misery? But there is no question of getting out of misery. It is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. So it is only a question of, you know, transition from one type of misery to another type of miseries. It will continue. And therefore, Prabhupada recommends that bhakti yoga, that's the solution. And he quotes that verse, yogina api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana. So Prabhupada knows that a tortured living entity in this material world, especially in this century, 21st century, he cannot focus on any other path of going back home, back to Godhead, save and except this process which he has created for us, chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Time and again, out of compassion for us, he keeps telling us that this is the way. This is the nature of the material world. This is the nature of your material body. One day it is going to dust. Don't forget that. And he keeps telling us what we should do to be aware that we are not the body and we are the spirit souls. He has given us the process. And he says that of all the processes, Bhakti Yoga is the best. If our consciousness has got polluted because of modes of material nature, then he says that you can get out of material modes of nature also by Bhakti Marga. He says that Mam cha yo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatite tan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Even the modes of material nature we can transcend only by the process of bhakti. So it's a very beautiful process that has been given to us. I'm staying with my son Sridhama Sakha. Other day he was reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto. And then he read out one particular sentence which has very much appealed to me. He said that he was saying that Prabhupada has written in the Purport, somewhere, I don't remember the exact reference. He said Prabhupada has written that nowhere in Vedic literature is it written that Krishna is Jnani Vatsala. It is not said anywhere that Krishna is Jnani Vatsala. But it is said that Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala. So Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala, and Prabhupada has given us a way by which we can try and, you know, we can aspire to be on the path to attract the attention of Srimati Radharani and Srila Prabhupada. So we are very fortunate, speaking for myself, very fortunate that I've had a spiritual master who has brought me on this path. So I'm very grateful to him, grateful to Srila Prabhupada, grateful to all the devotees who have been so very helpful to us in times of our misery. So I would like to conclude here. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Anybody has any questions or comments? Comment, Prabhu? Hopefully.
Prabhu, when you were mentioning about this doctorate that you got in 66, so one question came to my mind. It may appear a little silly, but I want to ask you
anything
this.
Material, I'll be comfortable.
No, I wanted to know that, you know, you may be 70 years old now, almost 70.
I'm 72.
72, and you've been practicing Krishna consciousness for the last 20 years, and you've seen so much of this material world. So I just wanted to know, what is your one realization that you are really, you know, convinced about in Krishna consciousness? What is that one very convincing realization that you have got in Krishna consciousness, if you could kindly share?
I have realized that all the so-called achievements in my university career are a big zero. Realize that. I remember when I retired when I was about to retire in 1999, for some time, though I was in Krishna consciousness for nearly 8 years, somehow the thought was touching my mind that how come, you know, that Maharashtra government has not given me state award for being the best teacher in the university. Somewhere at the back of my mind, I was thinking that others are getting, you know, they are being recommended every year. And, you know, now I'm going to retire in 1999. And after retirement, they don't give you this award of Maharashtra state. So that thought was lurking in my mind. And I didn't even express this to anybody, including my family, nobody, that, you know, this is something. I have done my service dutifully. I have never failed my students. I have done my best. But how come government doesn't recognize merit? That thought came into my mind. And believe it or not, Maharashtra state government gave that award in 1999, Best Teacher Award. After getting that award, I felt so guilty that a thought came in my mind that I should aspire for an award, and I felt that I have let down my spiritual master. And actually it is so. So somehow or the other, this dreaming about things that you should acquire, they overwhelm you in life. So now it really seems like a dream that, you know, I spent 32 years of my life in the university doing research, teaching, guiding students, doing so many things, industrial consultancy, all seems like a dream. If you ask me to do the same thing today, I'll be a failure, total failure. But somehow these things happened. So it's like that, it's fleeting. It's like a dream-like existence. And it never ever made me happy. Though, you know, I was working very hard, never made me happy. So I can sum it up by saying that material achievements are a big zero. Now if I walk on the road, nobody says this person got, you know, an award in such and such a year. Nobody ever knows. If I go to the department, there's fresh faces, new students. They don't even know who I am. Spent 32 years of valuable life, you know, trying to build up the department from empty hall stage. Nobody recognizes. So material achievements eventually add up to a big zero. So that's my realization. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavat Puranam ki jai.